Hi there, my name is Chiyun Ko, and you are listening to The Full Well. This is a place for us to find complete wellness as we explore our experiences, our beliefs, and what it means to be us. Thank you so much for joining us for our conversation today. Also joining us is Kayleen. Kayleen, thank you so much for joining us. Can you share a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself, and what you want to be culturally known by our listeners?
Hi, yes, thank you. So, my name's Kayleen. I am Filipino-American. Actually, I was born and raised in California, and my whole family lives in Hawaii. So I don't mind if people call me Filipino or Hawaiian or Californian. But I was born and raised in California. I'm a mental health therapist right now, and I lead online group therapy for people who are perfectionists, people pleasers, overthinkers. I don't really know what else I can share about myself.
Yeah, sure. Well, something I wanted you to talk a little bit about is you produce, you write for your blog, and you incorporate in that blog your artwork, and you use some comics, right, to talk about some mental health topics, which I think are really amazing ways to communicate maybe some things that might be hard to grasp with words. And so can you share a little bit about how you just got starting that, just putting together art and mental health topics together?
Yeah, so I actually grew up being an artist. So it was kind of the thing I was known for in my little town. And I knew I wanted art to be a part of my life just always. So for a long time, I was kind of pursuing other things that were my passion, which was I always knew I wanted to be a health professional in some way. So while I was pursuing that as a therapist, I was trying to kind of keep art on the side as a hobby. It wasn't until I took off for maternity leave for my second kid that I was like, you know what, now's the time. Now's the time for me to combine my artwork and my therapy background. And I'm going to start just writing out my thoughts and putting it in a blog and drawing about it. So there are these, I intentionally made it these kind of lighthearted cartoons that it always represents me and my brain, my overthinking brain. Mm-hmm. And that's why I called it the overthinking brain. It just kind of represents me and my own journey of finding self-compassion and learning healthier boundaries and stuff like that. Things that I wanted to share with people who are reading it and things that came up a lot with my work with my clients. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think the first time I really drew something related to what's in my blog right now was when I was talking to my clients in a group setting. And we were talking about this idea of feeling really good for a long time and thinking you were over whatever thing you're dealing with, anxiety or trauma, whatever. And then all of a sudden, boom, it hits you and you feel like you're back to square one. And the way I described it kind of came out like a picture visual where I was describing a brain telling you, hey, I'm going to wait until you're ready for this before I give you the whole enchilada of what you're really feeling underneath. Mm-hmm. And after that session, people really resonated with that. And after that session, I was like, I think I'm going to draw that just for funsies. And during my maternity leave, I just started drawing more and created my blog out of that.
I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think there's just power to art and power to visuals. So I think being able to use art to speak about shared experiences that other people might have. And so speaking about your blog, you had recently written something called Grieving and Self-Care. So could you share a little bit about what you wrote about in that blog and what prompted you to write it?
Yeah. So the article really starts out talking about how our world really shifted after George Floyd's death and all the different reactions that were coming out of people across the country, across the world. And I start out kind of talking about my own initial reaction, which was, oh my gosh, I really need a help as a helper, knowing growing up that I wanted to be a helper, going through this path of becoming a helper. I just felt like I needed to do something. In my article, I kind of share little piece of my journey where I had to stop and really realize that, wait a minute, I cannot effectively help anybody until I slow down and really focus on what I'm going through personally. And what really sparked me stopping and realizing that was watching George Floyd's memorial it was while I was at home just washing dishes, doing my regular routine. And my husband turned on the TV right as they called for the moment of silence at the end. And as soon as it started, I couldn't hold it. I just started crying. And I feel so emotional talking about it right now. Just that moment of like, oh my gosh, I've been holding on to all this grief. I got so swept up in, oh my gosh, I need to do action. I need to do what my purpose is. I need to do something, that I didn't slow down for 1 second until that moment and realized that I was holding on to some really heavy feelings. And those feelings were spread out over so many things. And I think that's what made it so hard for me to wrap up this clean idea of how I can be a helper. I just felt really pulled in so many different directions, confused, and that heaviness, I just had to stop and really identify it and label it as grief. And I think once I was able to sit and label it, label what was happening with me, I thought, I can't be the only one experiencing this. Just witnessing everybody's reactions on social media or on the news, I'm like, this is people's expressions of grief. So in my article, I kind of zeroed in on saying, look, I am not, as much as I'd like to be, I am not an expert on how to help create social change. I'm not a leader in that area. I think that's what I was thinking I had to be. But I end up saying, you know, I have to acknowledge my limits, but I want to share what expertise I do know and just talk about grief with you, talk about grief with my readers. And so I just give a few tips about how to think about your grief and how to take care of yourself through grief. Because I had to believe that other people were really feeling that and didn't know what to do with their grief and may also be kind of pushed to be the helper.
Yeah. You mentioned so many valuable things there. I think one that really stuck out to me is you said what you're seeing, not all of it, but some of what you're seeing in social media, what you're seeing is somebody's grief. And so thinking about it in that way, I think carries such a different meaning to the information that we might be seeing on social media. There's been so much conversation around this performative allyship versus genuine partnership. What you're also talking about is wanting to have that genuine partnership, but in doing so, forgetting about your experience and forgetting about what you may be going through because you feel so pushed to say, not only is that expected of you societally on social media by the people around you, but also you feel internally motivated to be able to do that because this is something you care about and it's something that evokes an emotional response for you and it matters to you. What I think is also important for us to realize and think about, like you were saying, is this is an individual experience for all of us. Every single one of us is going through our own journey in experiencing those things. You might experience some grief that hasn't had the chance to come out yet, and that it's important to do so.
Yeah. And one thing too, that I feel like I hear what you said really frequently when you said that it's not immediately obvious that it is grief, and kind of go into it in my article. But what happens when you go from how things were or how things used to be to how things are now, the first thing you experience is grief. And when things really shifted, everybody collectively in the country, in the world, had this sense of things are really significantly different now. Even in the Black community, where they're like, this has been something we've been dealing with our whole lives and been trying to tell you or trying to express. Even then, it's like there's this different world that you're living in where all of a sudden there is this bigger push for allyship, and all of a sudden there's these different complexities within that of, is that genuine? Is it not? How do I deal with people who are trying to be my ally and it doesn't feel like it's appropriate? So everybody has felt this shift in how things used to be to how things are now. And that's already confusing to begin with. But yeah, the first initial feeling that as a human you experience during that bridge is grief and a sense of losing something that once was. So everybody is at that point in this state of kind of readjusting, readapting their inner self to deal with that change.
Yeah, that's so important that when you go from how it was to how it is, what you're doing is you are going through loss, the loss of what used to be. And I think that's a conversation that's been present in some ways when talking about COVID and talking about this is the world how it used to be. And this is my life now with COVID, with a global pandemic, and there is a loss in that. And I think it's so important to also recognize, like you're pointing out, we're actually going through another loss as individuals and as a society, as a community of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the other reasons why I really wanted to write about grief specifically is because in my work in therapy, when I'm talking to people about grief, one of the biggest things I say is you don't want to fall into telling yourself how you should or shouldn't grieve, how you should or shouldn't feel as you're going through grief. I think a lot of people are familiar with those five stages of grief. People are kind of vaguely familiar with that, but it still kind of feeds into the I should be experiencing grief in this way, or they'll mistake it for, okay, well, I'm grieving, I should be experiencing anger first, then denial second, then bargaining. It's mm-hmm. not like that. Grief is very, very complicated, and it just arises in you, and it's very unpredictable about how it comes out for you. What interrupts people processing grief is having that should. I should be grieving in this way. I should have gotten over it in this many months, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So that really interrupts your ability to move through the grief. I noticed that I was kind of doing that for myself, where I was like, I should be dealing with this by helping, pushing forward, not stopping. And meanwhile, our world is kind of saying, grieve this way, grieve that way, don't grieve this way, do it that way. This is better. This is worse. And it was just this overwhelming chatter that I felt like I needed to slow down and talk about a bit more.
Yeah, I love that perspective, because I think, like before, we've talked about there's a lot of you should do this, you should respond this way. And in doing so and then experiencing that, what's also happening is you need to grieve this way, which I think is such an important perspective that maybe is missing in the conversation today, and why that sort of directive that we see from social media and on the news and from people around us, why that might feel detrimental to what we're trying to do as a group and as a community. What were you hoping that your readers could get out of reading this article?
Since I started with my own journey of feeling so overwhelmed with all these feelings and needing to slow down with it, I think that was my initial like blanket thing I wanted people to be able to do, was give yourself permission to slow down and just feel within yourself what's going on. Allow it to be there. I knew that there's so much potential for people to be such great allies, or so much potential for people to be such great helpers and supporters in this situation. But that potential can easily be stunted if people don't slow down and give this to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've had a few conversations for the podcast where we talk about the importance of having your own journey and the freedom to have your own journey to engage with what's happening in the world. And like you're bringing up now, such an important thing in that journey is dealing with your grief. One, recognizing that you are going through grief, and two, giving yourself the space, the compassion, and the love that you need to deal with something like that. So I think it's really important for you through your blog and through your artwork, and just for people to be talking about how important that is for us, not just individually, but as a society right now.
Yeah. And another thing that really stands out to me about what I wanted people to get out of it is I think I know a lot of my readers have that same pull to help as much as possible. And a lot of people I work with do that to a point where they are genuinely repeatedly ignoring their own needs. And it is stunting their ability to help other people. They reach these breaks where they feel like they have compassion fatigue, or they just are pouring from an empty cup. And so I feel like through a lot of my posts, I'm always trying to encourage this healthy boundary of saying, hey, what you are feeling and going through really matters. And your entire purpose for being here is not all about giving, giving, giving until you're completely depleted. So the goal is not to help others before you help yourself. Slowing down and taking care of your grief is an act of self-compassion, and it's not selfish and it's not lazy. It's necessary.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder to how many Asian American people that's such a foreign concept, that it's not selfish to put yourself first. And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I'm curious, how do you think that Asian Americans in particular can get into this pattern of helping others before you help yourself, and getting to a place where you pour from an empty cup, even though you have nothing else left to give?
Yeah, I think it's so culturally encouraged. Maybe people don't necessarily mean to say give when you're completely depleted, but it's such a desirable trait. And people do get a sense of meaning and purpose out of that. Like, oh my gosh, I've accomplished this much. I'm doing well. People are congratulating me and happy for me. It's something that people don't necessarily see as a potential problem necessarily. So you can very easily push yourself into doing that. And so I think for Asian Americans, the culture is, it speaks very loudly to like, help others, help your community, be together on these things. And it kind of starts very easily blurring into, well, even though I feel like I am completely compassion fatigued and I'm burned out and I could probably benefit from some self-care, I should keep going. I should keep giving no matter what. So it's, again, it's that shoulds. It's people are really shitting on themselves in mm-hmm. those situations where I have to keep going because it's expected of me. And it kind of, there's kind of this snowball too, where culturally it's like, okay, this is more desirable to give to others than it is to focus on yourself. But then because you've gotten so much joy out of being able to do that and genuine meaning and purpose out of that, we can kind of confuse giving, giving, giving out of an empty cup for, if you don't do that, you're losing your meaning and purpose in life.
I love that. I think that is so insightful, that yes, there's this external pressure of this is what's desired from you, and also this internal component of I personally get joy, I get meaning out of giving to people, and I get meaning and joy out of helping other people, even though I may be needing help myself. And I think that brings up such an important point, because what I'm thinking about then is, are there Asian Americans who just don't know how to get meaning and joy without doing that? And so they feel like, if I want to feel like I have a purpose and I have meaning and I can experience joy, I need to do this. I don't see any other way I can experience that sense of meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People can also get caught up too. And like, if I'm not able to do what has typically brought me joy, that I typically see as my purpose and meaning, something must be wrong with me. If I'm being depleted by this, what's wrong with me for not being able to do these things that are meaningful and not feel joy from it? Why am I feeling depleted? So you can go down a really steep, slippery slope there. And the more you kind of feel ashamed of yourself for not being able to pour from an empty cup, the more your self-esteem and self-compassion goes down, and it just kind of spirals down. So it's, I think it's pretty easy to fall into without really realizing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're bringing up such another huge component of the Asian American experience, that feeling of shame. And if I don't feel a certain way from helping other people and giving to others before I take care of myself, and if I experience shame around not being able to do that, of course, like you said, it's so easy to go down a rabbit hole and go down that slippery slope. And yes, this tendency of helping others before you help yourself is in some ways external, and it's desired from you and maybe expected of you culturally in your family, in your friend groups, but also because that's something we want to do. That's something we've taught ourselves that gives us joy and that gives us meaning and that gives us purpose. And the journey, I think, well, from what I'm hearing you say, in being able to help yourself is being able to find meaning and purpose in just that act, in the act of taking care of yourself, having meaning and giving you meaning.
And one distinction that I like to make when people are struggling with that is when you put your wants before the needs of others, that is selfishness. Mm-hmm. If you're putting your needs before the wants of other people, that is self-compassion. Our way of making healthy boundaries is acknowledging which is which, what is a want and what is a need. If you're constantly sacrificing that to attend to other people's wants and needs, then you will get depleted to the point where you're not as effective of a helper as you could be, as you want to be.
I'm really glad you brought that up, Kayleen. Could you share with us how we as individuals can distinguish for ourselves what is a want versus what is a need?
That's a big question. Some of it takes some self-reflection, because I think people have gotten into that habit of putting other people's wants and needs ahead of their own needs, the line can get really blurred for ourselves. It's hard to really recognize, what is my need? What do I need? I'm sure there may be people who are listening who are saying like, yeah, it would be nice to stop and listen to my grief, but do I need that right now? Mm-hmm. Like, yes, it's important, but do I need to act on that right now? Yeah, I think it's kind of this two-part system where you just start getting more acquainted with what your needs are by just being curious. I'm feeling these really intense emotions. What could that mean? What could I possibly need right now that might be helpful? You might not know for sure. So it's a matter of just playing with it and having curiosity about it, taking out the self-judgment about it. That's one of the biggest parts about curiosity, is it's just being curious. It's not giving yourself crap for feeling like crap. It's just acknowledging, hey, wait, this is going on for me. How is that impacting me? What could be helpful? And giving yourself that answer, because that answer might be different for other people. There's no right or wrong. It's just a matter of, yeah, getting acquainted with what your needs are and how you feel like you're really taking care of yourself. What things are you doing that really make you feel like you're caring for yourself? And yeah, the second piece is that communication, which is, once I realize that I have these specific needs, a big roadblock for us actually falling through with that is feeling that shame or guilt or discomfort with telling people who may be asking or expecting certain things from us to say, hey, no, right now, I need to attend to myself. Giving some kind of invitation, I guess is what I say, giving an invitation for them to connect with you at another time. If you're saying no to one request, then offer something else that you are willing to give, or offer to try to do that thing at another time. So some people, I think, are really afraid of rejecting somebody's request, but the rejection doesn't have to feel so icky if you're doing, yeah, a rejection alongside an invitation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think how I'm understanding you is, one, being able to figure out what our needs are almost sounds like this strengthening and exercising of a muscle that maybe for some of us might be just really weak and something that we just don't use very often. And you mentioned, I'm feeling these really strong emotions, and being able to figure out, okay, these emotions are coming from somewhere. What's happening for me inside of me that's evoking these emotions? And are there some needs that I have right now that are not being met that's being now expressed with these feelings? And something I was thinking is, you know, there are some feelings that we are really good at pairing with the need that comes with that. So when we feel hungry, when we feel thirsty, we know, I need food. I need water. That is a very easy, I feel this way, I know what my need is, I know what I can do about it. And I think what you're saying is, we can develop that sort of awareness and attunement to ourselves with other needs outside of just the physical needs that we may have in our bodies. And so I think that's really important for us to think about. This is something we already do. This is something our bodies are capable of doing, and it's inside of us already, and maybe just something we need to take back out again and practice a little bit more and use it a little bit more than we have been using. And just knowing, like you said, it just might be a lifelong journey of figuring out, I'm feeling this way. I think that means my body is communicating this. So, and I need that. And like you were saying, for some of us who have a really hard time with the no, with the rejection, just being able to think about it as, well, this is a no to this request, but I can say yes to this other thing. I can say yes to maybe doing this at another time. I can say yes to this other activity that I have the capability of doing. And even the idea of I am saying yes to me. And so I'm saying no to somebody else. I'm saying no to doing this event or XYZ. But I'm actually, what I'm doing instead is I'm saying yes to something that I do need. And I'm saying yes to giving in a way that is healthy for me. And I think being able to think about, like you said, it's not a rejection, but it's an invitation. It's an invitation to do something that's healthy, not just for yourself, but maybe also for the relationships that you're a part of. And I think those are just some really good ways for us to be thinking about what is a need and how can I act on that and how can I implement that in my life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's all boundaries are about. Boundaries are about connection. So many people frame it as like boundaries are my way to keep people out and push people away and upset other people. It's a very scary sounding thing. But if you think about it, boundaries are the thing that protects our own sense of comfort with ourselves, with our world, with the people around us. And by being clear with people about what your boundaries are, you're showing them that world. You're inviting them into your comfort space, to be part of your comfort space, to know what it is so that you have a closer relationship.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Kayleen, because I was thinking about, what do you think are some effects that Asian Americans or just anybody, I guess, could experience in being so quick to support the Black community or to support what's going on in the world, and in doing so, just kind of forgetting about ourselves and our experience and what we may be going through. What do you think are some maybe side effects that you could experience in doing that?
I think it could possibly be another way of setting yourself aside. There is kind of two sides that feel like they're conflicting, where you have this really intense value as being a helper and wanting to be an ally to the Black community during this movement. That is a very, very important thing for a lot of people. And then there's this other side where it feels like, I'm going through so much things. I'm so overwhelmed. This is reminding me of my own struggles. There's so many different ways that this movement has been impacting people on a very personal level. And it brings up a lot for people. This is reminding me of this trauma that I experienced or that my family has experienced. So this is bringing up my own anger about things that I've dealt with. Mm. Those two sides almost can sometimes feel like they're at war with each other, kind of how we think that helping others and helping ourselves is at war with each other, when really they can complement each other very well. Mm. So with all these things that are coming up on our personal experience, our personal reactions, whether it be directly related to what's going on with the Black Lives Matter movement, or if it's bringing up stuff from our own issues, it's kind of like, what a wonderful opportunity to have this level of empathy that perhaps other people don't have. You can hold both of those things at the same time, and you can attend to both of those things at the same time without spreading yourself too thin. Mm-hmm. Our compassion is really limitless. So by tricking ourselves into believing that we need to direct all of our compassion to others, it's really limiting ourselves. We can show compassion to other people and their struggles, and show compassion to ourselves and our own struggles at the same time. And it interestingly makes us even more emotionally strong, I think, to be able to deal with what's going on, attending to our own needs and attending to other people's needs.
I think you're talking about, if you're feeling, I need to help, I want to help, that's what I want to do. Really, if you are doing that while you are ignoring what you may be experiencing, if you're not thinking about, oh, this is actually making me think of how my family went through struggle, or how my family went through XYZ because of racism in this way and that way. And in ignoring that, you are actually doing a disservice, not only to yourself, but to the people that you're wanting to help. And so really the answer is, if I can be compassionate towards myself, and that will help me practice compassion and empathy, like you were saying, to the people I'm wanting to help. And that just makes us so much more emotionally capable to do the thing that we wanted to do in the first place, which is to support the Black community, but doing it in a healthier and maybe even more of a robust way than if you were completely ignoring what you might be going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to really be in touch with what you need when you're struggling with your own issues, what would be really helpful to you, and what has been unhelpful. And in that way, when you're supporting other people, you have that empathy in mind, and you're able to see from their perspective much more clearly than you would have if you were completely ignoring your own struggles.
Yeah, I love that. That being able to practice that empathy, compassion, and love for yourself, you are then preparing yourself to be able to do that so much better for other people. I'm thinking about just how this is a racialized topic. I had a recent conversation with another podcast guest where we talked about Asian Americans are living in a Black and white world right now. A lot of the narrative is about, she said, a Black and white conflict. And in participating in that narrative and that story, what happens to the Asian American experience? And I think what we're talking about now and what we need to do on an individual health level is something that I think applies even on a bigger scope and a bigger picture, that in wanting to engage in a Black and white conversation and a Black and white narrative that's been dominating social media and all those other things, it's also not necessarily the best thing for us to lose our Asian American experience and our Asian American identity. I think this conversation is not just about what do I need and what are my needs, but also as somebody who is Asian American and as somebody who is part of a big racialized picture, and what is my Asian American identity and experience, and how does that fit? How am I honoring that in what's going on? So I'm curious, Kayleen, what do you think then are some ways that as Asian Americans, as individuals, and as a community, we can honor ourselves and our experience while being able to honor the Black experience and Black voices?
I keep thinking back to just starting with the base of acknowledging what is coming up for you, having that awareness of what feelings are coming up for you, where they're coming from. I think we had both mentioned before that, you know, sometimes the thing that triggers us to really think about taking care of ourselves is having a really intense emotion. And if that happens, that's fine. Like, that's a great red flag. Like, hey, I need something. This is a really intense emotion. Ideally, what we want to be able to do is more regularly, even daily, like have a time when we're checking in with ourselves. How am I doing? What am I going through? Having that mindfulness to just pay attention to what we're going through day by day. And if there's any hint of a sense of disconnection, again, having that curiosity, where is this coming from? What do I feel disconnected from? And sometimes it might lead to, maybe I'm feeling disconnected from myself. Maybe it'll lead to, maybe I'm feeling disconnected from people who I want to be supporting. And maybe day by day, the answer is different. But I think it's so important for us to build that daily attention to ourselves, because we have so much information in our minds and bodies that I think we just ignore. And that's where I think you just kind of get to the point where you're trying to push through and not pay attention to yourself and just be the helper and ignoring so much of yourself. It just builds up over time. There are really cues every day that we have, every moment we have cues within ourselves that tell us that we need something, or tell us that we need to connect with our own stories a bit more.
What you're mentioning about this commitment to myself every day, that I'm going to be committed to what do I need, being able to listen to myself and know what my needs are, and also in doing so, being able to better respond and better listen to and do something about what our bodies are telling us. Because like you said, there's so much information in our minds and in our bodies.
I think the intensity of what the Black community has gone through over centuries in this country. I think people can easily say, like, okay, my family's been through a lot of discrimination and prejudice and stuff, but it's nothing compared to the Black community. So I think there's an opportunity for self-compassion there too. And again, being able to hold both sides where, oh my gosh, I really feel the heaviness of what the Black community is going through. And I want to be a support for that and a voice for that. And at the same time, I can acknowledge that what my family has gone through is also so important and is very heavy for me.
Yeah.
So you can hold both of those sides at the same time. And it's not a competition. It's not like if you take care of yourself, if someone says, how dare you take care of yourself and these other people are suffering more than you, then it's like, well, no, that's not the voice you need to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're capable of having compassion for both sides. So
I love that you don't need to erase your pain. You don't need to erase your family's history for you to be supportive of another group of people, for you to be supportive of the Black community. That actually what might be the healthiest and the best thing for you is to love and be compassionate towards both of those things. Kayleen, I just wanted to thank you so much for our conversation today, just about the importance of listening to our grief and giving ourselves the space and the time to process that grief and just giving ourselves the freedom to focus on us and say yes to us and not just to our own individual needs, but honoring our Asian American experience and our family's experience, maybe our culture's experience, our community's experience. And so I just wanted to thank you for that. I think that's a very important conversation, and we don't have to lose our experience. We don't have to lose our story. We don't have to lose our family struggles, our Asian American experience, our Asian American identity in order to participate in what's going on. And there is a healthy and compassionate way for us to do that, like you've talked about today. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks for giving me the chance to have this conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, Kayleen. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.